The Share Pickers Podcast.
And joining me on the podcast and on video, it's Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you? Good to see you again.
Yeah, I haven't seen you for a while there. How many of those books have you read through at the back?
Oh, well, I've read all of those. We've got a bit of a damp problem. So there's a gap there. We've had some of the bookcase ripped out. So it's not looking quite as glamorous as it would do normally. But yeah, there's a few new additions up there, which is quite nice. So yeah. We've got scaffolding there, damp there, and the builder's in doing the bathroom down there. So if you hear a horrible sawing noise in the background, that's tiles being put up being chopped up and put up amongst other things. So we've had damp in this lovely Victorian terraced house, and it's showing that it's aged a little bit under the weight of this very wet autumn and winter that we've had and spring that we've had. So
yeah, but it's the worst on record. February being the wettest on record. I don't know if it's climate change or just, you know, one of those periodic things that happen.
I'll leave that to the experts, but I do know that when we start cricket training outside fairly soon, the first ball's probably going to the turf and stay there. It's that wet. It's not even going to bounce. It's that wet. I'm absolutely dreading. We'll be playing in welly boots, I'd imagine, for most of May.
Yeah. But in fact, we've been looking around for a new house, and it's good to go in this weather because you see the gardens that are flooded, the gardens that are not flooded, you know, the problems with the houses you don't see.
So you'll see a lot of damp, I would imagine.
Yeah, you see, you sell a house in the summer when it's sunny, shiny, everything's dry, but when you're in the winter, you can see the problems. So last week, lots of data coming out. Let me just share the screen here. This is the two-year bond, and you can see here, it's come off a lot from up here, pretty much. Let me just move my face, the way I think. So it literally peaked out pretty much, 5.4, it peaked up to 5.7, and it dipped down to 4 there, pretty much. The bounce, that was in December last year. Bounce up and now rolling over back towards that level. And Bailey last week, Andrew Bailey, did soften his stance a bit. Beforehand, he used to say, oh, it's too early to talk about interest rate reductions. And now he's starting to entertain that. So what is the consensus for us? What are they saying? Everyone's trying to guess. I suppose it's nailed on it's going to happen this year. But the month is what everyone's questioning. What's your thoughts and what's the consensus on that?
I can cheat and I can look at Bloomberg and I can look at London Stock Exchange data stream, and they're suggesting that June is going to be the start of the move down in both the UK and the USA, and that we'll get 3 rate cuts from both the Fed and the Bank of England this year. However, of course, that consensus was wrong at the start of the year, because it was looking for the first cut in March. That's been and gone. And they were looking for 6 cuts from the Fed and from the Bank of England this year. Now that's been recalibrated to 3. And yeah, I think you're absolutely dead right to look at the 2-year here. That has got an uncanny habit of moving 6 to 9 months before the Bank of England, and the 2-year Treasury in the US tends to move 6 to 9 months before the Fed. And that's still, what we're looking at there, about 4 and a bit foreign change from the 2-year. So you're looking at, 5 cuts, but over a 2-year period. Again, possibly a little bit steadier certainly a lot steadier than we were looking for, than the markets were looking for at the start of the year. But that's, at the moment at least, in keeping with the scenario of 3 cuts this year. And the Bank of England, let's face it, we are in recession officially. And the maths of the inflation figures and the energy price cap suggest that inflation will rattle down towards the 2% target and even undershoot it for a couple of months. But what happens after that, with wage growth still running at 5.5%, 6%, with the oil price going back up, that's what's going to be exercising Mr. Bailey. And really, I know he'll be pleased to see the inflation figure come down, but he's not trying to set the price of money for today. He's trying to set the price of money for 2 years, 18 to 24 months' time, 2 years' time, because that's how long it takes to filter through the system. So that's the tricky job that he's got. And again, therefore, he will have to be cognizant of oil prices and the prospect. And you are presumably going to see, governments, whoever happens to be in charge, try and pull a few levers if they possibly can to try and squeeze some economic growth out of the system.
Yeah, look at this. This is a very interesting line. This is the 200-day moving average, often referred to as the bull bear line for most stocks. Just averages out the price over the last 200 days. And you can see this trend starting to happen here. So it last crossed up over that level, for instance, if we go back in February 2021, and literally the top of the market, I think, was around about September, a few months later. So the bond market's ahead of that. It's starting to tick up there. Yeah, and now look, it's literally ticked down below it. It broke down below that pretty much in December 2023. So you could say, if that's, if the market sort of started rolling over, September, I think, was the high of AIM and all that, and 2250. If it's sort of six months ahead of that, you could probably say, June is when the markets are a big rally, I suppose, if that's it, if you're looking at that point of view.
Yeah.
But yeah, very interesting. You mentioned oil there. Something like oil, because it has been bouncing up a little bit recently. And like you said, you know, we hit a low back down here in December 23 again, and now it's back above that 200 and hitting what, 86 is the Brent futures here.
So, yeah, that'll be keeping people busy. And, you know, OPEC is sticking generally to its production targets. We've got Biden still in the USA banning the launch of new liquefied natural gas terminals. Shale growth is still strong, which I think is one reason why that they put a bit of a, that certainly put a huge lid on the natural gas price. But the US economy is I think proving a lot more resilient than everybody thought. You know, if you think about, again, the consensus in 2022 was we get a recession. Nope. The concession in 2023 was we would get interest rate cuts and inflation cool. Nope. And then the consensus at the start of 2024 was 6 rate cuts, the first in March. Nope. So again, we've got to tread a little bit carefully here. And you've always got to watch out for what's priced in and there for what the unexpecteds are. And, you know, the US economy, buoyed by the Biden government running a 7% fiscal deficit, has definitely been one of them. And that's possibly a reason why oil is strong. And in addition, whether we like it or not, you know, electric vehicle sales aren't perhaps proving to be quite as strong as people would hope. And the economy is proving stronger, and that still means that there's oil and gas consumption. So these things may be, hydrocarbons may be with us for perhaps longer than we would care to consider.
Yeah, it's funny if you contrast the US markets. I know a lot has been, you know, the S&P 500 has been pulled up by the Mag 7, but it's rallied a lot. You know, and part of my worry is, you know, the old saying about America sneezing, everyone catching a cold.
Yeah.
Have they had their rally? Because they're pricing interest rates already. And by the time you have some kind of correction, our markets should be starting to rally and then we'll be pulled down. It's almost like they always rise. We a fraction of what they go up. And then when they come down, we get pulled down with them. But it's so annoying. I mean, S&P 500 here, let's look at the indices. There we are. I mean, look at that. It's normal.
I mean, it's a pretty strong trend. And at the moment, you know, from a technical perspective, you can frankly see it running further. I guess in the US, you've had the same situation where either, you know, a cooler inflation number is, oh, goody, that means rates are coming down. An inline inflation number is, oh, goody, rates are coming down. And a stronger than expected inflation is, oh, goody, it means the economy's strong and corporate earnings are really good. So at the moment, everybody's kind of having their cake and eating it at the same time. I guess the challenge that you've got as the Fed is, I mean, the deficit is rattling higher. You know, the annual interest bill is now running at $1 trillion, annualized is now running at $1 trillion a year, which isn't very funny. That's a big chunk of the tax take, nearly a fifth of the tax take, which is normally the sort of thing that you would associate with a banana republic, not with the world's leading economy. Mm. And so that will be something in the back of Powell's mind, even if he said publicly it isn't. It's a presidential election year. And he won't want to be seen to be rocking the boat. But if the economy is running pretty hot as it is right now, there is no reason at all for the Fed to even think about cutting, unless, again, you think there's some seriously bad news coming 24 months down the road, which there could be because of the growing government debt and the debt maturity wall. A lot of companies locked in cheap debt in 2021 during the pandemic, during lockdown. Some of that will start to roll over in 25, 26, and that will be exercising the Fed's thinking in terms of where the price of money should be in 2 years' time. And again, what's the two-year Treasury now? 4%, again, pricing in maybe 3 cuts this year and another couple in the year after. But again, not much more. And again, that may be because the economy, US economy is still chugging along, probably certainly stronger than the UK one is, maybe because the government is being fiscally more loose than the UK government. Again, how sustainable that is an open question. And the Congressional Budget Office is on the front page of the Financial Times saying, if we're not careful in America, we've got a Liz Truss-style accident coming because we are being so free and easy with fiscal spending that something, you know, we may need to pull our horns in at some stage just to reassure bond vigilantes that, you know, that we're not going to let inflation gallop away and start eroding the value of those coupons.
Yeah, and is there any truth thing? I've heard a lot of people say that the Bank of England won't reduce until the US reduce, because of course a lot of commodities, everything's priced in dollars, and if we reduce first, then we're importing inflation essentially. Do you think that's the case? Do you think the Bailey's waiting for the Fed?
I think it's a consideration, but if you look at how central banks have behaved, the big ones have behaved, they've generally acted in concert. So you wouldn't be surprised if they all go 1 month in the same month. I know we've got Japan going off in the other direction because that's actually
a raising special situation. Japan, isn't it? Really,
great. It's in a universe all of its own. But I wouldn't be shocked if they were to act in unison to avoid that sort of concern or potential confusion.
Yeah, yeah. Commodities wise, let's have a quick look at gold, because that's doing very well. I mean, that's
an interesting chart.
Yeah, because it tried several times to get above that sort of 2000 level, and in fact, if you scroll back, it's previous day in 2022, and in back, you know, 2020, but it's not got above that level, and now it has. It's broken.
It seems to have stuck there now, and it actually got to 2200 briefly last week when after the Fed. And he's done it really without anybody caring. You know, there's lots of coverage of Bitcoin, you know, digital gold. Or some of our apprentices at my firm tell me some of the newer employees, they're all getting very excited about that. And I guess this comes back to, if we are in a bubble, is it a debt bubble, which you know, the Congressional Budget Office is now raising as a potential challenge if they're not careful. And you can look at the gold price and run it against the US debt ceiling or the aggregate budget deficit, and there's not a bad chart there at all for chart lovers. And so I think, you know, gold bugs, if you want to use a derogatory term, are looking at debt, and I think that they're looking for are, you know, this US two in 10 year treasury, if they prove sticky because bond vigilantes get worried about debt levels, that would be potentially your starting gun. And intriguingly, gold's been going up even though the US dollar's been pretty firm, which normally doesn't happen. So again, I think gold fans are getting quite excited right now. Equally, the equity market's not paying any attention at all because gold miners are absolutely flat on their back. They're doing very, very little, except there is the odd bit of takeover activity there between gold miners. So even if investors aren't paying attention, gold execs seem to be, which is quite interesting. Oh, you're bringing up Shanta. Well, there we go, because that's where there's a takeover scenario right now, which I know some shareholders think the buyer, EQT, a conglomerate, is trying to get this thing, get Shanta at a cheap price. It has slightly raised the bid, but it still works out the equivalent of about 1.1, 1.2 times book value at a time when book value could start to rise pretty quickly because the gold price is now at 2,200. Shanta's all-in sustained cost is, what, 12, 13, 1,400. So they could literally be pouring money out the ground if they get everything going at both mines full tilt. So book value will be going up. They're getting it at 1.1, 1.2 times book. And when Newmont took over Newcrest last year, they paid 1.7 times book. Now, I know that's a biggie taking over a biggie, operating in Australia, not Africa, with a lower all-in sustained cost and so on. But nevertheless, I can see why some shareholders are looking at that thinking, they're trying to get Shanta on the cheap. One extraordinary general meeting has been postponed. There's another one due any day now, I think just after Easter. And so it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But certainly, even if equity investors aren't looking at the gold price, gold execs are, and they seem to be trying to snap up assets while they can.
Yeah. So I know you can't invest for yourself, but, if you were looking for, you know, what kind of themes are you interested in by now? Because I remember a while back, you know, many years back when, inflation was on its backside, basically, and no one was talking about inflation. And you mentioned a couple of times there, you know, when people are not talking about things, you've got to be aware of them. They're not paying attention.
Yeah, when you're on the side of the majority, it's probably time to pause and think, as Mark Twain once wrote. Yeah,
exactly. So what themes interest you? What themes that people are not paying attention to, do you think?
I think debt is the biggest theme out there, which, again, I think, I had one trusted writer say to me, well, I don't think debt's ever an issue. I don't think, you know, government deficits are ever an issue. So in that case, why do we pay tax?
Yeah.
So I think, I think it's with Charles Ponzi. I think it's the balance is there. It's people don't care about you going bankrupt as long as they can't see you going bankrupt. And I think Truss and Kwarteng made it obvious that the UK was skint by not having a plan and free tax cutting project. So I think you've got to strike the middle ground. Yes, the debt's going up. You've got to make it clear that you're trying to keep it down and not just being willy nilly with it. But I think debt is a major issue. I think it is boxing in central banks because they probably need to cut to keep the interest bills down and stop them, you know, crimping government plans. Equally, that means they might have to be a little bit free and easy with inflation. So I think that is the biggest issue out there. I think it's therefore means that governments, central banks may be inclined to take a chance with inflation because actually it would help debt to GDP numbers. It would free up government spending a little bit. And I think what's interesting for me is that commodities relative to equities have underperformed for a long time. But if you look at the CRB commodities index, that looks to be on the verge of a chart breakout, interestingly. So I'm still on the inflation path and I'm still intrigued by commodities and gold and how they've done less well than equities on a big relative basis. and how nobody's talking about them at all. So I think, again, what people aren't talking about is what's interesting more than what people, and I understand why people are excited about AI and NVIDIA and all of those things, but very few questions still about commodities and gold and miners, which is why I'm probably doing more work there than I am in some of the other hotter areas right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Just quickly before, I'll try and find that index. But
The CIB Commodities Index, yeah.
Yeah, this is the yield, a 2-10-year yield curve. And you can see this is a weekly chart. And I've shown you this before, but the red bars are recessions, essentially. This is when it's inverted before.
Still
and then
there.
It pops back out, then you have a recession. And it sort of pops back out. And it's never been as low as it is now. This was obviously the COVID, which was a technical sort of recession, but it shut down the economy. But it's never been this low. The inversion has never been, and it's bounced back, but it still has yet to sort of get above this, almost at this minus 0.2 level, which is when it does that, it tends to, when below that is a recession. But as yet in America, we've not had a recession, but it tends to happen after it pops above that.
Yeah,
you know? So we could say that's happening.
Okay, so let's play devil's advocate. So you've got the Congressional Budget Office fretting about American annual budget deficits. When the economy is doing well, what happens if you do get that unexpected recession and tax income goes down and welfare payments go up?
Yeah.
I mean, then you can see bond vigilantes having a proper paddy, and the Fed will be trying to cut rates, even though they'll be saying, well, hang on, the debt's going through the roof. Don't we need a bit of a higher compensation in terms of yield to entice us to come and buy this stuff? Because there's dollops of these treasuries coming our way to fund the extra borrowing. So that's a potentially very, very interesting tension. That's certainly what you would expect in an emerging market or a tin pot republic.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect to see that sort of tension in America, but I know one or two people out there are looking for it. And actually, there's a chap from PIMCO, one of the big bond houses in the Financial Times this week, saying it's a scenario that's crossed his mind, and he actually prefers bonds from countries that are, you know, other developed markets, not the US, because of this potential strain. And if we did get that unexpected recession, there will be a lot of pressure on public finances very, very quickly. And the temptation to print money to keep and run QE to keep bond yields under control, that would be an extreme scenario. But it's certainly on some people's radars, possibly gold fans, for example.
Yeah, but it's something we mentioned before a while back about the something you know, smelly under the floorboards here. Because you're thinking, what has prompted this to invert so massively compared to like the great financial crisis, you know, and these are dot-com bubble. It's worse than all those. You're thinking, well, this hasn't really played out. We've had a couple of, you know, regional bank problems in the US, but it hasn't really played out. I mean, the economy in America is doing so well. You know, us was a technical recession, was a deep recession. I'm thinking, why? What has caused this? You know, the bonds, as people say, you know, bonds know things that the equity markets don't. What do they know? Is something happening here that is a little bit scary?
It is. I mean, I guess what they, I mean, you can see that the US unemployment rate has ticked up by about half a percentage point from its lows, and it's still only at 3.9%. But normally when it starts to tick up, it stays ticking up for a while, and so it doesn't tend to stop at 4%. So again, that might be something that the bond market's looking at and keeping a track of. So yeah, do keep looking at. I know that the monthly non-farm payroll numbers are very, very noisy. They're prone to revision. If anything, you're better off looking at the revisions, not the headline number when it's published, when it's a more considered view of the statistics. Because certainly through most of 23, the revisions were down, not up, which again would be commensurate with a slowing economy. And I think that there is, I know if you go through, you know, X and look at some of the really interesting commentators out there and some of the blogs you can find on Substack, there are commentators talking about how it's actually part-time employment that's keeping the jobs numbers good, and the full-time employment numbers are starting to weaken. And it's people taking a second job just to try and make ends meet again because of inflation, which is a potential challenge. So do keep an eye on the non-farm payrolls numbers. Yeah, well, there's the CRB index, which again looks like it could be, to my untrained chart eye, quite interesting right now.
Yeah, you're right. I think commodities are something to look at, and I haven't got any exposure to commodities, so
my record, I must admit, with them small cap miners is absolutely appalling. But never, I mean, again, because there are so many moving, maybe we can look at what some of the moving parts are with those in another one of these sessions.
Yeah. Russ, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak to you next week.
I look forward to it.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.